This is a production of Cornell University.
Essay meeting, October 8th, 2009.
Oh, it's meeting before fall break. I'm like, wow, this looks surprising to you.
Yeah. I don't know.
Wow. Enjoy.
You got two names, huh?
Oh, yeah.
He does.
Yo, yeah, me too.
What's his name? What's his name? I'll have him pointing in, like, multiple directions. Right.
Now 4:45, the meeting is called to order. Call it, Maya. Unexcused. Did you call me?
We know you're here.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. Oh, okay, good. Okay, we'll now move on to approval of the minutes.
I just have a small change to the minutes. I'll talk to Maya afterwards, but I think I just wanted to include a line in the minutes regarding the budget, just to make sure it says that by a vote of 13 to 6 that they approved that their budget. No. Right, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, are there any other changes to the minutes? Are there any motions?
Call for acclamation.
There's been a call for acclamation. Is there a second?
With the change.
Second.
All right. The minutes with the change that Mikhail mentioned are now approved. Moving on to announcements and reports, my office hours will still continue despite fall break this Saturday from 12 to 2 because I'm not going home. GPSA update from Renil Desai.
Okay, so I attended the GPSA meeting on Monday. Basically, the two big points Gordon gave is an update on readjusting the budget. So if you guys have any questions on that, you should go to cornell.edu/reimagining, and he has a little link there where you can email him directly. And if you have any specific questions about anything, if you have any questions about the specifics, you can ask me after. I'm sure Chris knows all the specifics for that, too. And the other thing is for anyone in Cal, if you guys are interested, I think they're like looking for undergraduate input for selecting the new dean of Cal, the school itself, because the current dean is stepping down this year. So if anyone's interested in that, you should contact your school administrator as well.
Any questions for Representative Desai? Okay, moving on, we have a Meet Your Rep town hall meeting announcement from Representative Zandler.
Hi guys, so I sent out an email this week on a Meet Your Representative town hall style forum that I'm planning on holding. Got emails back from about 8 of you for a couple of people for showing interest for the 28th of October. That's probably when I'll be doing it. If for some reason I can't find a room or something like that, also would be looking at November 11th. The likely time would be from 5 p.m. until probably 6:30, maybe 7. You're free to step in or step out whenever you need. I'm also thinking that the first meeting will be on North Campus. I think it's important for you to press them first, especially because they showed so much interest in the past election. And I think it would be a good way to follow up on that and actually let the freshmen know what's going on, or if they become disillusioned by all the stuff that's done course, if any of you have any questions, comments, recommendations, I'm very open to them. And there will be free food, and hopefully soda. So I'll send an email out to all those who express their interest, so that to keep you updated on.
Any questions for Representative? Oh, and just a point of order, I suppose, just try to speak into the mic so that the audio can be picked up for people to access on the website. We have an internal operations update by VP Kumar.
Great, thank you. Now, just two things. First of all, thank you to all of those who came out to the SA retreat this past weekend. I think it was very productive. I just wanted to also thank Corey and Alex for giving presentations that I think we all really enjoyed. And I thought that the brainstorming session was very productive, so I just hope you guys keep at it and follow through on the ideas that you presented this past weekend. The second part was I'm planning to have a meeting with all the committee chairs probably the week after fall break. So if there's days that are better for you than others, just let me know. But yeah, this is something I said I would do last spring, and I think I'm probably going to at least try to do it every 2 months. So just let me know what days are good for you, right? Thank you.
Questions? Okay, we have IB Council update by Representative Lissell.
Hi, everyone. So IB Council had a conference. They kind of put this together. They kind of put together a conference last minute based off of something they're trying to do in the spring. It's a civic engagement conference. And it's going to be held in Washington, D.C. from Thursday, October 21st to Sunday, October 24th. So we're looking to maybe get 36 representatives to go. I personally cannot go, but if there is some interest, please let me know. It should be a great conference with great speakers. Chance to meet with what? And chance to go to DOJ today headquarters as well as Capitol Hill.
Yeah. Date? What are the dates again?
21st to 21st to 24th of this month.
Of October.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Let's go on the side.
Like funding for this, are we paying our own way, or is that going to be SA funded, or what?
IB Council does have some money. IB Council as a whole has money reserved for the conference. But as far as the details, like what you might have to pay, I'm not exactly sure. All right now, I just got an email about it.
You know when we.
If you're interested, just email me. I'll get you my information.
What are these days?
Okay. Community Center Council, VP Biggs.
So I guess we'll just go straight down through all the bond and funding stuff. So really quickly to begin with, Community Center Councils, the Appropriations Committee heard the Community Center Councils on Sunday, and we ultimately decided that we could not make a decision given the information provided. I guess about half of you guys on the Appropriations Committee know the rationale and the reasons. I'd like to thank Representative Gitlin for his suggestions, which proved to be very useful. So we heard the Community Center Councils, but again, we're going to rehear them in about probably 3 weeks or a month, and they're going to make a new presentation, and we'll hopefully come to an allocation decision at that point. Moving on, let's first start with Minds Matter. As you guys can see in front of you, we have the violent funding recommendation of the Appropriations Committee for Minds Matter. They were previously funded at $1, and they requested and were allocated at $1 by a vote of 6-2. Are there any questions or motions? So take your time to look over the rationale if you want a second. Yeah. Sure. Cornell Minds Matter is a mental health organization. So unlike EARS, which is here in 2 weeks, which does counseling, Minds Matter just puts on general mental health wellness events. For example, they do Procrastinate in the Straight during study week, which is a big event. They have all kinds of stress relief activities. So they also basically set up large-scale and small-scale mental health and stress relief events. And they also are sort of a bridge, I guess, between students and more formal mental health resources like Beers, like Gannett. So, yeah, that's what they do. Standard?
To one of these six IVOs, or you explain exactly why the $1,500 for the set of funds and that the members and the active bond conference was adequate, or what their adequate funds exactly was.
Okay. In the same way as EMS sends multiple members to the annual EMS conference, the annual Active Minds Conference hosts basically different focus groups for different workshops, different focus groups for each specialty within their executive board. So they have workshops on publicity, workshops on event planning, workshops on speaker series and all this stuff. So Minds Matter sends a different executive board member that focuses on each of those areas. And then they get expertise in that particular area. The other reason is that they send one van to a different city, but they send one van and the seven people fill the van. So in their mind, at least, there's no real price gain by sending five instead of seven, because they already pack four people into a hotel room and seven people into one van. So we'd be saving like $40 or $50 in a registration fee, but really there's no utility gain from us. Same, they can only send four or five people. Other questions? Motions?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
you want to comment?
I can make a motion. Yeah, I mean, I think this is, for all of those that were at appropriations, this was, a group that really presented a fantastic budget that really broke everything down. They, seem like they used their money very responsibly, and they provide, critical service to the Cornell community. So with that, I'd like to make a motion for acclamation to accept this.
Second, any dissent? Okay, seeing none, I suppose the budgets are approved.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Wait. Oh, so you go all for
it? It was a call for acclamation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, next, can we please move on to Concert Commission? Concert Commission, again, as you guys can see in front of you, was previously funded, requested, and was recommended to be funded at $12. So this is not a change of the past 2 years, but I guess the Appropriations Committee felt like Cornell Concert Commission really was one of the violence-funded groups that really reaches the largest number of students of all the violence-funded groups that we fund. Though there obviously was some discussion about cost sharing and some of CCC's events, the committee ultimately decided at full funding with a vote of 11-3. Any questions? Motions? Calls for acclamation?
Second.
Is there?
I'll call a hand vote. That's all right.
Hand vote. Okay.
Call it mine.
Hand vote?
Hand vote? Sorry. All right, we'll take a hand vote now. If you approve of the allocation for the Cornell Concerts Commission, please raise your hand. Okay, and if you don't approve... Okay. So I guess there's one nay to it, and you can see. And this budget also passes. Moving on.
All right, next we're going to the Slope Day Programming Board. We discussed Slope Day at length. We discussed Slope Day at length. Obviously, Slope Day was requesting a 20% increase in their budget for this year from $15 to $18. An Appropriations Committee granted the full request of $18, the vote of 12 to 2. On sort of the flip side, it's not really reflected in the rationale, but Slope Day is also contemplating the possibility of them having to absorb additional administrative costs, such as CUPD, which right now are assumed by CUPD. So basically the way it works is Slope Day has fixed costs of about $180,000 per year. That's set. The stage, the trailers, the fence, everything they do. Costs $180,000 per year, no matter what act they bring. for every for all the money that we fund them above $180,000 a year, that's the money that goes directly towards an artist fee and honorarium and affects the quality of the act that we can bring. So basically, for this allocation here, the Appropriations Committee really recommended that Slope Day, with the additional money that we're providing them, go out and actively seek to bring better talent for Slope Day. And that's to the tune of, what, $37,000?
$39,000.
So basically that extra $3 adds almost $40,000 in increased funding for talent. However, reduced administrative support through CPD, through Gannett, through other sources may in the future reduce that amount that's going to talent. So in a way, we're kind of hedging our bets. The real amount of our increased support to talent could be substantially less than 40,000, but that does show sort of our, I guess, commitment as a student assembly to Slope Day as a programming event, as the event is having its administrative support withdrawn. Is there any other questions, discussion yet, Matt?
So, were there any indications that there would be cuts to Slope Day's administrative, there would be cuts to the support for Slope Day's administrative fee so that they would have to cut into this $40,000 that we're providing them extra for programming that would go towards CPD?
Basically, the way things have been working around the university is that last year all departments were required to cut, I think, 10% or 15%, and departments are being increasingly pressured this year to look for additional cuts. And for departments, as I said, for example, CUPD or Gannett, which currently absorb the cost of Slope Day for their organizations, they may in the future tell Slope Day that they can no longer just support the event out of their budgets. Then, in which case, that would come out of the extra $40,000 that we're providing.
Could we have added on to our appropriation that added money would not go towards programming, but towards these administrative fees? So I think it's definitely warranted for us to maintain safety precautions and UPD at these sorts of events. But to increase the amount that they have for programming by $40,000 when we're cutting groups, because we don't find that extra added talent necessary during this sort of economic crisis, I don't think it's warranted to give that much money for something that is not necessarily necessary.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we can consider Appendix B stipulations in the spring about where Slope Day spends its money. Again, it's very difficult for us to look at, some kind of a prescription that would say Slope Day can only spend X dollars in an honorarium for an artist. But we can certainly consider those kinds of things in the spring.
And those are all done in the spring?
Yeah, so basically the way it works is we give out the bond funding decisions right now. So for example, for class councils, we allocated, $2 for class councils, I think. Right now, that money just goes to class councils. In the spring, if we place a rule and say that each class gets 25 cents of that allocation, or 50 cents of that allocation, then that will become policy. But right now, for all the organizations we fund, we're just giving them a lump sum. So really, the spring is where we can kind of go in there and target more specifically about what we're doing. And then those rules don't take place until the funding cycle starts next fall. So we have all semester to do the rules. And we'll take our time doing that. Yeah, Vince?
Yeah, also, the reason why, I mean, it's a really large increase, but I think a lot of members of the Appropriations Committee felt like there was student demand for better Slope Day Act. And so I was actually thinking for an Appendix B stipulation that the majority of the increase would go towards a better act and try to limit as much as possible. Because what I don't want to see happen is all of a sudden Slope Day has, this extra money and the organizations that were originally supporting Slope Day cut their support because they realized, oh, wow, Slope Day just got a huge influx of money. Let's cut our, let's not support Slope Day as much. So definitely I think we should try and get the majority of the funding towards a better act, which is what students want to see, and then deal with cutting the funding from Slope Day from other sources on a one-by-one basis. But I definitely think the majority of the funding should go to a better act because that's what students want to see. Thanks.
Representative Rao. I encourage everyone to read through the rationale because it has both sides of the arguments to, for you to be able to make a more informed decision. Speaking from
the higher quality actors and performers that come to slope A, more people get on the slope as opposed to just stranger. So that could also be argued to increase
the enemy.
The phone. Okay.
Any other questions or motions?
Is the call to question? There's a second, is there a dissent? Are there any other motions?
Call for acclamation.
Okay, dissent. All right, SLPA's budget approved.
All right.
All right, we have Dean Hubble.
Dean Hubble? Obviously, the decision the committee doesn't necessarily recommend reflect my personal beliefs on the matter. And speaking now from a personal standpoint, I'm not sure whether I would have supported a full $3 increase given these considerations. But I think now that the assembly, the full weight of both the appropriations committee and the student assembly is behind it, I think it's our responsibility as executive board members and Rami when he presents the decision to get behind it in a way that's consistent with. With what trustees want and, with what student interest is. So I guess that comes down on our shoulders. Do you want to say something?
No. Okay.
So, all right, let's move on to SLPA Day Programming, or Cornell University Programming Board. So CUPB, again, funds speakers, everything from Colbert, John Stewart, Kevin Smith, who else have they brought? So a bunch of different acts. For those of you guys, again, to provide a little history, CPB ran into some very tough times last year with the Bill Maher and Howie Mandel shows, and where they were predicting many more people to attend the shows and much more revenue than they actually collected. As a result, last year they didn't have any for cost programming in second semester, and this year their total budget for programming is I think on the order of $20,000. So basically only about $1.50, or almost $2 I guess, but in order to pay down their debt. So as you can see here, a lot of the committee members considered very heavily the circumstances and effects surrounding the events of last year, but on the whole the committee was very supportive. CUPB is restructuring, and they're moving from 2 Barton Hall shows per year to 1 Barton Hall show per year, which they feel will limit their financial exposure, essentially, and prevent circumstances like what happened last year in the future. So they're moving to more Bailey shows and less fewer Barton shows. I think that's all reflected, I guess, in the rationale here. So any questions? Comments? Motions? You feel?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, I guess, the way I'm approaching all of these, I voted no on all three, but I guess the way I'm approaching, I voted no on all three within the committee. I guess the way I'm approaching all of this is looking at it from the full student activity fee level, and, my goal is to try to keep it the same without raising it at all. I felt like some cuts had to be made. I would have been in favor of $7 instead of $7.50, But it seems like the vote of the committee was pretty overwhelming, so I'm going to just call it a question.
Second.
Any dissent? Okay, any other motion?
Call for acclamation.
Thank you. Dissent.
All right. We'll go with the hand vote. If you're in favor of the Appropriations Committee decision to fund the CUPB at $7.50, please raise your hand. And if you're against. Okay, so the three nays. Maya. Yeah, thanks. Okay, we'll move on to amending the adopted SA budget. So, The SA budget was approved last meeting, and my concern with this was twofold. One was that after the meeting, a few assembly members approached me saying that they weren't 100% clear on the discussions and the implications that they had. And the second was, I know during the SA retreat and even within committees, people have a multitude of ideas. And I'm trying to ensure that we have as much money as possible to make these ideas come into effect. Now, my amendment was primarily concerning the T-shirt funding, but after speaking with the SAFC co-chairs who felt that proper consultation needed to be taken place, we decided that we're going to try to meet next Wednesday after break along with Terry Ector of the Assembly's office, who's in charge of the accounts, to see if we can incorporate a cut into a larger conversation of how the SAFC money should be spent. That being said, we're going to probably meet Wednesday. I can send you an email out on the listserv to finalize an exact time, and you all would be invited to that. And next meeting, I'll present whatever the outcome of the meeting is. Are there any questions associated with that? Okay, now we can move on to... Oh.
Yeah, do you mind if I make one more announcement?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, before we move on, I just wanted to remind all the committee chairs that if you've had a meeting, just give a quick oral report. Are there any committee chairs that met last week that want to give an update? No. All right,
yeah. New business, Resolution 12, VP Kumar.
They've been throwing this idea around, so I think this sort of central body resolution would really push that in the right direction. second part is the housing lottery time slot. Right now, I talked to the campus life folks, and what they said was every single year, a lot of parents call us and complain about the fact that their freshman was unable to get a good lottery spot and subsequently a good lottery room. And what their response always is that it was actually a student assembly resolution that put seniors first in the lottery system, then juniors and so on. Right now, campus life only guarantees housing for the first 2 years, but the system of their time slots kind of undermines that guarantee. So by reversing this, previous FDA decision, I think would really help the whole on-campus housing system. Those are basically two ideas. First of all, to put software to the front line and introduce the seniors, and secondly, to incorporate in-house lottery systems for cash and credit cards.
VPN.
Yeah, so I guess, would you like me to motion to move it to this today, or
do
you
want to
discuss it? Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't
know.
Representative Denver.
I was wondering if because of the troubles that were had at the end of last year with the housing lottery system, if perhaps a clause could be included where students living off campus that are rising juniors in the coming year, so people who were freshmen last year but who ended up off campus because of the housing system when they really wanted to live on campus, could be put in with the other rising juniors, with the other rising juniors when they seek to be part of the housing lottery.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. That was actually a recent policy change that just came into effect last year, the first year. I think the reason was, at the end of the system, what they did was they put all the people that are currently living off campus at the end of the system, even excluding them, I believe there are about 30 beds for them. There's a real demand that I'm afraid doing that is because people who are living on campus will want to continue, I hear you. It's certainly a concern. It seems like the demand is just too much.
Parliamentarian Cohen.
I was just curious, if Resolution 12 were to pass, then nearly all of the housing opportunities available for upperclassmen would have their own housing lottery time, in which case, what would be the applicability of Resolution 13?
I'm sorry, I can
hear
the first part.
Oh, sure. If the College Town dorms were to have their own in-house lotteries, and West Campus were to have their own in-house lotteries, and the program houses were to have their own selection process, then in what instance would the official campus life housing lottery time be applicable?
Yeah, that's a good question. So basically, the in-house lottery systems are only applicable for current sophomores and juniors, whereas the full lottery system time slots are available only for current freshmen. So that's the same answer only affects sophomores and juniors, and overall time slots are available.
Representative Gitlin.
Just a quick question. Did you ever consider making so that, or making an amendment to this so that rising juniors and rising seniors, it would be sort of random lottery for them? Because I feel like on some level, one of the perks of being upperclassmen is getting, small benefits, but that are tangible. Here and there. So I was wondering just why the seniors would be most disadvantaged.
That's actually a very good question. It's my understanding was last year what happened, this is coming from their book, but from my understanding last year what happened was essentially that, which is that two classes essentially got the opportunity to get a tax on. So I think they're certainly looking for that.
Representative Desai.
Um,
Yeah, like, I'm definitely in support of the idea because, like, as a freshman coming here, one of my greatest concerns that I heard from upperclassmen is, you know, freshmen a lot of times get pushed out of the housing system. But my concern is similar to Alex's, which was that, you know, if there is an in-house, like, this is more of a question, I guess, if there is an in-house system where the current sophomores and juniors have priority in the housing system, I'm just not sure, like, how much of the spots are they actually taking up and how much room are they leaving for people to claim spots through Resolution 13 with the out-of-house system?
Yeah, that's also a very good question. So currently right now there's already an in-house system, so it does hurt, it did hurt over the last 2 years, you know, freshmen were running the sophomores trying to get into the West Coast house. So it certainly hurt. One of the ideas that was thrown out of band at the end of last semester was, you know, to reduce the number. What happens is campus life essentially blocks the number of rooms available for the 15-year non-campus lottery. One of the ideas thrown around last year, I think it was introduced in the SARC resolution, was to reduce that number, you know, by 50%. I didn't want to introduce it with this because I think that a discussion that could be had with the West Campus housing, the West Campus housing. But that's certainly something we can,
Wait, reduce the number of spots that are reserved for people coming in, or reduce the number of...
Reserved for, well, either way, reserved for people in the in-house.
Before I move on to the next speaker, if anyone from the audience has anything to say, feel free to step up. Okay, Representative Walsh.
This works out well in the segment next.
Well,
yeah. I mean, so basically, you know, they have all that information, you know, pretty formatted pretty well. I believe they were looking to release it, so this next resolution mentioned this fall from SBA. That would be made public to everybody. Because I think that affects the calculus students who, you know, deciding should I go in, should I not. So, you know, then the students have been calling on campus life to all that information.
Liaison Fly.
So I was thinking when we talked about this, and my only concern is just that this kind of pushes, we're worried about keeping sophomores available housing. This kind of pushes off seniors and juniors. It's really very, I mean, for both of them, it's really hard to get housing now. And there's a lot of seniors and juniors who still have to work on their parents don't want to live on campus, and they don't want to try to find a housing anymore. So I'm just worried that if sophomores start going first, that there's going to be even less chance for the seniors and juniors to live on campus, especially with the increasing freshman
class. Yeah, I mean, that's really a very, very concern. I think that's, you know, that's what's looking for is that, you know, they're going to be next week, you know, here, so that I guess the club can kind of figure out each way they want to be. That's really a very important concern. You know, I guess Cornell only guaranteed that in the first 2 years, and you know, I feel like this reverse time slot sort of undermines that policy, which is why I'm kind of in favor of keeping, you know, switching up some software services. That's certainly a very concern.
Representative Micheletti.
I was just curious how transfers fit into this whole thing. Are they categorized, like, if they come in on a new sophomore year, are they categorized as a sophomore? Sometimes they come in later than the housing lottery, so how would their name be read?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I just, you know, I bring the same question with the post-submitted with campus life. Basically, what happens, I believe sometimes in the fall and the spring, all the transfers are classified as, you know, rising sophomores, rising juniors, depending on their credit level. But all that happens before the rooms are even allocated. So, you know, before all the information is released, that will have been made known to that. And I think it's like a sort of a better stress.
VP Basil.
So, I just wanted to say that I wholly support shifting the focus of the housing lottery to benefit sophomores. I know that a lot of friends of mine were basically put in like Oquego or somewhere random on North Campus as sophomores when they tried to enter the housing lottery. They ended up living in College Town as sophomores, and frankly, I mean, I live in a fraternity as a sophomore. If any of you guys lived off campus as a sophomore, I'm interested to hear about your experiences because, you know, for them, they basically said, you know, we weren't ready to live off campus as sophomores, to deal with rent, to deal with paying bills, with landlords, you know, with all of these associated issues that in a lot of ways is kind of like growing up. You know, as a 19-year-old, I feel like now as a senior, I'm much more ready. Like, I'm living off campus now, and I'm much more ready to live off campus than I, you know, than I was as a sophomore. So if anything, you know, I would say to those seniors whose parents don't want them to live off campus, tough. You know, you're 21 years old, or almost 22, you're going to be living on your own in a year anyway, or maybe back in your parents' house, I don't know. But, you know, so I think that if anyone is going to be left out by the housing process, especially considering that we don't have enough beds to meet demand, I think it should be seniors rather than sophomores.
Okay, we're now done with the first speaker's list, so if anyone hasn't spoken yet and would like to speak, please say so now. All right, before we move on to the second speaker's list, I have two questions for you. First, yeah, was Campus Life consulted about this, and if so, were they amenable to these changes?
Yes, that's a good question. Yes, they emailed college campus residents. This is a sense of the body of but I did talk to campus life just to throw that at him. Maybe they would, you know, it's come up in the project which we're discussing on pressure construction and housing. And, you know, the sense of binding really doesn't say it's our opinion that it's reasonable and it is to do everything. So, you know, we can be in our team, we can all kind of work together with campus life to find the best way to do it. So it's not binding, but I think it's a sense of work. But the second one, you know, it seems like it made sense to them because you're making it more difficult to set the budget, how many rooms you can decide, it's just a different way to. And as I said, you know, they get a lot of phone calls from parents and sophomores who are very concerned about that. So I think they would be very favorable to this, and I don't think it being too difficult to implement that. And then the final one, the third resolution, resolution 14, you know, from my understanding from talking to them, like they had all the information.
Did you wish to discuss all three resolutions at once, or just the first?
I mean, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess if people are okay with it, if they have questions about any of the Red Life Kumar resolutions, please ask. Moving on to the second speaker's list, Representative Desai.
Yeah, I completely agree with Vice President Basil, and the question I had was pretty much related to something he brought up when he talked about his sophomore friends that got stuck in Oguego and other program houses. This is, I guess, the question towards you. Like, is it possible for us to take it a step further and instead of guaranteeing housing for the first year, is guaranteeing West Campus housing for sophomores? And then saying that if we're going to reallocate anyone to, like, being shifted off into, like, a random program house, that could be, like, a junior, and if they want to, like, accept the lower level campus planning that they can, but at least giving that priority to all sophomores to have that 1 year to live on one campus?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting idea. Certainly, you know, it represents a larger shift in policy, I guess, DC resolutions, so I encourage you to, you know, go to like a red light meeting for an issue. I'm certainly going to look at it seems like a little beyond the scope of what I'm focusing on here, but it would certainly need to explore that.
Good. Representative.
I don't know if you're aware that there are two different classifications of transfers. There are guaranteed transfers and regular transfers. Regular transfers are not guaranteed on campus housing. They are told that if they want to come to Cornell, they have to find their own housing in many cases. Would it be possible to include a clause which would guarantee all transfers on campus housing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, again, certainly an issue that we have to tackle. You know, the chair of the PDO transfer risk, which is the chair of this year, they focused a lot on the implementation of staff housing and transfers that are in last year. And I think one of their goals was to move pretty along to reevaluate staff housing to see if it was the best area. So I think that will sort of lead us
Representative Walsh. Representative Desai has something to say.
Yeah, just going off of what I understand about the financial aid policy is that the financial aid policy is allocated under the assumption that you're paying for a double on either Western or campus, like he said. But I think as far as applying for more, as long as you didn't request housing in any other department other than a double or a triple on one of those areas, then you can apply for a grant for the additional funding for whatever it would cost you. But I'm pretty sure that unless you're already in like the bottom 10% of that financial aid bracket where they're paying for all of housing, then they don't offer those grants because it doesn't technically make sense.
Res Lec Committee Member Ray Munson.
So first I want to kind of build on what Steve Dave was saying before. When freshmen first come to Cornell, they're guaranteed housing on North, and it's a huge transition for them to come from wherever they may be living, sometimes international students, other times, it's just being away from home. It's definitely a tough move. And then to spend the next year you're forced to make an even bigger move and become independent and having off campus to deal with the landlord is something that I don't think rising sophomores have to deal with. And I think that rising juniors and certainly rising seniors are much more situated to deal with. On a second note, and kind of building on what committee member Mensah was saying, I would definitely like the Red Left Committee and maybe start a general, more broad conversation. Possibly do away with or drastically shrinking the in-house lottery system. I think that, it's nice that people have the opportunity to live in the same place for a long period of time, but at the same time, it does disadvantage people who may have gotten, the short end of the stick as a rising sophomore and then never had the opportunity to get back. I'm a firm believer in equality of opportunity, not exactly equality of results. And I think that everyone should have the same opportunity to get housing, not necessarily the same results, but I think maybe evening out that playing field is definitely something we should consider.
Yeah, absolutely. I think last year, I
introduced
a resolution calling for the number of spots available in the in-house lottery system to be reduced by 50%. And
realizing that I had gone to that meeting. So yeah, I agree with the conversation.
Representative Flash.
I just want to say, as a sophomore who's got long campus housing in College Town, from being a rising sophomore, it's really not that hard, even, you know, as a younger person to get housing deals, landlord, or anything. It's not like you need to protect people from evil landlords in College Town. It's not that hard to deal with it. In many cases, you can get more for less money outside of Cornell housing. So I don't think we should be necessarily trying to protect people from having to deal with the evils of landlords and leases, but rather trying to, you know, make it as fair as possible for people to get out of housing.
Liaison Flash.
I would like to totally agree with that. Also, I just want to bring it up. I'm not in support of the state health lottery. I'm going to be on campus in my sophomore year, and I got it. I didn't get a time slot and they asked for the regular lottery, so I got taken off campus as well. But the idea of the lottery is like trying to generate U.S. campus houses is ideally trying to generate a community with a sense of cohesion at the end of the year. So it's trying to build upon the communities they have. And I'm not saying I'm for the account lottery system. I'm just saying that their goal and that the reason behind it is to generate a
Representative Brad.
As another sophomore who's living off campus in College Town, kind of forcibly pushed off by Cornell Housing, I must say that you're not dealing with evil landlords, but my parents and probably the parents of many other sophomores who've been pushed off are not thrilled with the idea that their 19-year-olds living in College Town and they much rather have them living on campus being fraternity or dorm or whatever. And I think that another thing to take into consideration is when you're living off campus as a sophomore, you're probably not going to go back as a junior or senior. And I don't know why Cornell wants to kind of incentivize indirectly moving off campus as a sophomore if you're not going to come back.
Representative Gitlin?
Oh, you.
Okay. Any other speakers? All right, thank you. And these will be brought back to the table next week where they will be voted on. Moving on to Resolution 15, Increased Student Representation in Residence Hall Director Selection. Sponsors are Representative Brow, Representative Nicoletti, Serene Lee, and Ray Metzger. Okay. You have 5 minutes to present. Yep.
Speak into it.
Thank you.
form of how our IDP was chosen is something called the screening committee, which is what we want to put two student members on. And the screening committee consists of eight administrators who are part of residential programs, and it's chaired by Joe Burke, who is the director of residential programs. And it's this committee that interviews our IDP applicants and candidates, and then finally presents a recommendation to Joe Burke, who makes the final decision. So essentially, the student would come into play after all the applicants have been gotten from the conferences, and they bring them back to campus to interview them, and students would be able to give their opinion on some of the candidates, or all the candidates, that they see. And it's really a way to kind of get the student opinion on that right now all there exists is what the administrators think. And something that I found is that even by having a student in the room, administrators will change their tone. So even the mere presence of a student will make administrators think twice about what they're going to say. So that's the context of this resolution.
Moving on to speakers list, VP Kumar.
So I have a question about the resolution, but first I just want to commend you guys on the process by which you went about drafting this resolution. I think it was incredibly important that you sat down with people from campus life, before you even started writing. You involved the RSC, and I had an opportunity to stop by your committee meeting this past Monday, Tuesday, I guess. You guys did a phenomenal job, kind of distilling everybody's. There were a lot of diverse opinions in the room. I think you guys did a good job of getting a consensus on most issues, which is really commendable. I just had a question about the last clause there. I think it's obviously a very important clause to put in there to make sure that the community understands that the program has a special role, and therefore the program at RSC also has a special role. So I just wanted you guys to talk about whether you envision, future action, follow-up processes. Is this the end for Program House RHD? I mean, is this all you're going to say about Program House RHD?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment. I think that John shared with me. It's really been a very good process. We've really been able to hear a lot of diversity. At first, actually, when we proposed this to the committee, we only had one voting member on the committee, one member that we were going to propose to go to the screening committee, and that's just talked about with Joe Burke, the director of Hope Residential Program. But the committee actually wanted to add a second member that we would send and make the distinction between one of them is the traditional dormitory and one of them is program house, because I think the committee really realized how different the opinions and the experiences of people who live in a traditional residence hall as opposed to a program house. The fourth we did therefore resolve kind of states that we aren't done. Like you said, this is very time sensitive. We really want to get this student acclimated onto the committee, and we want that student there. So we want to pass it before we were finished with everything. But in future resolutions, we want to look at more of how program houses have a say in the process of choosing RHDs and more of the administration, because it's a big, big issue. And right now, I don't think that the administration is exactly sure on students' experiences in program classes. So that fourth one is mainly to show that the student assembly is very cognizant of these issues and is not finished with them.
Just add, the reason that it's time sensitive is that when we spoke with Joe Burke, he said he'd be willing to, you know, get this up and running right away. And the RSD selection committee has been starting to be, not to really get that busy until the next semester, but just wondering to get it going.
Representative Lucia.
Just some clarification. For the subsection 3 on the first it says students must have lived on campus for at least 1 year. Appreciate you live on campus and has nothing to do with RAT. So maybe you want to put in a lesson device or something under the umbrella of red light. And 5, it says students must have previous experience in matters of residential and community life. Can you explain what
to answer for part number 3, if you look at part number 5, previous experience matters of residential community life, it's kind of directed for being on the committee and then maybe a reorder. So we just want to write out the specifics if we didn't want to exclude anyone, but obviously it matters of residential community life would include someone who's an RA, someone who's a member of the RSC, someone who's on the SA Red Light Committee, or has made other contributions to Red Light and Cool Down in that regard. So I don't know. Do you think it would be better to list out the names of the organizations? The reason we didn't do is we didn't want to exclude any of them.
I just feel like it's a little bit misleading because people who live on campus and kind of have no idea what RHT is, and then you're throwing them that they apply to the process that they're going to take a big part of RHT. I mean, I guess I'm confused as to what previous experience really entails. So I think it's more much than that kind of previous experience. So I get a little more clarity.
Yeah. Okay, VTB.
So again, I just wanted to confirm, so the language in the therefore resolved clauses kind of shifts a little bit between language that would suggest that it's more of a recommendation and that it's more deterministic. So I guess, if anything, I would just sort of suggest that you make it very clear which one you're going towards. I guess at the end you say number 8, I guess if I'm doing my, or was it number 7 at the end, the final decision must be approved by the majority of the committee. I mean, I understand that it's a decision to recommend a certain candidate, but, I guess that sort of know where our voice is coming in and to what extent it's coming in, and to make that clear in here, so.
Representative Brown.
Hi. Thanks, Ed. This is great. I think that this definitely needed to be done because I've talked to a lot of people about housing, a lot of administrators, and there's some very simple solutions that they haven't even realized could be done just because they haven't talked to any students. So I think this is a great way. You guys are doing a great job, and it's a great initiative, and I fully support it.
So since this is new business, just a reminder to keep your comments to questions if you have any.
Sorry.
Liaison Fly.
So just a quick question. So the students that would be on the committee, they would only have the power to have recommend new RHT candidates. It wouldn't be able to do the reasonable. Like, people who want to run away from the event. They would, these two representatives wouldn't have the power to, recommend RHT they want to get rid of, would they?
They can't bring RHT applicants to the process. They're only judging which applicants are in the pool already. And if the committee feels strongly about removing one, with both student and administrative support, and that's how it would go. At this point, if two members are put on the screening committee, then two of them would be students of 10, and eight would be administrators of 10, two more. So they're just dealing with the applicant for right now.
All right, before moving on to the next speaker, I'd like to remind the audience members, if they have anything to say, please raise your hand and I'll recognize you. Representative Smith.
I believe the students are not foolish.
Speak up.
Okay. I think the students are being that mentally short yesterday. How limited exactly is the student input? That's kind of the same line for your question, because I think students might be a little unaware of some things about things that go on behind the scenes about RSD, they might not be exposed to certain things that are achieved through the process and other things like that. So exactly what role do you play? How many students are there?
Well, the student is going to be a full voting member, so they'll pretty much have the same power and input as the rest of the members on the committee, barring Joe Burke, who is the director of residential programming, and he is the ultimate desire in the So, I mean, they will have a full voting right in their take place. Take part in all events that take place on campus. They're going to have access to confidential information, and the students, the only thing that they're really not going to be able to go to is conferences, which many members of the committee don't attend for financial reasons.
I think that something that also we were talking to Lisa and Dwight about worthy is the fact that, you know, how are students. How are students qualified to be on this committee if they don't see, you know, a heck of a lot of the things that the RAD do behind the scenes that students don't see? And our answer to that is essentially that students are giving their opinion on what they do see, and then the administrators will give their opinion on what students don't see. And this is adding student opinion. It's not making a whole committee of students that will either accept or reject the final say. It's just another way for everyone to be more informed.
Community member Camille Jarrett. If you can introduce yourself and state your year in the microphone. No, sorry. So the recorder can pick it up.
My name is Camille Jarrett. I am currently a senior and the RA in Mary Valley Hall. And one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, I think it's important to not
That's a very good point. And, in the resolution, in the first the therefore resolved clause, section one, it says that one student must come from a program house and one student should come from a residential hall, because we realize on the committee really the differences in how the students' lives are in these two separate living styles, and we address that.
I think to add on to that, though, in your third requirement, it says, and are recommended to live on campus for the duration of their tenure. So it could potentially be the case that a student may have lived in the past, but is not living in the program house when they're currently serving. I think that's where the concern is. Representative Desai.
Okay, so I had a couple of questions for you guys. The first was brought up already about like the previous experience that matters with residential community life, like this is coming off something that you guys recommended. Like, do you guys feel you really have to like qualify what that is? I mean, is that the whole point of the application process, that people apply when they think they know they have experience, and then you guys decide who that is? So I don't personally think you should, because I feel like you said it discriminates against people. My second question was, you talked about how the position requires a substantial tax commitment. Like, I'm not seeing, like, this is a question, like, what are they going to be doing outside of actually, like, living on campus and participating in res life for like whatever their current responsibility is, like an RA or whatever. And then the last question was, Rami just touched on it, clause number 3 that said, and are recommended to live on campus for the duration of their tenure. I wasn't really too sure about that. Like, are you saying that you recommend that as long as they're in this position, they apply for on-campus housing, or like, and we had a lot of discussion about how it's not really feasible sometimes for students to remain on campus. So, I mean, basically more, are you guys targeting like, you know, freshman sophomores for this position, or like junior seniors? Like, I'm just wondering.
Good points there. This position would be available to anyone who is not, or if you're a sophomore, junior, or senior. It's not going to be available to freshmen because it's going to be selected in April. So, freshmen take on this position. In response to the responsibilities and like all the things that people on this committee do, we've got a list of things that go on with their RSG search process. Pretty much a year-round process. A lot of things that go on. Something when we met with Joe Burns, he told us was he had an RA that was sort of assisting him in matters like this in past years, and there was tremendous time. Over 300 applications were processed, and the student did, you know, make an effort to try to meet with all of them. So the reason we put that in there was to kind of just maybe not warn, but let students know that it really has to be taking substantial time.
Recommendation part in the resolution where it is recommended that there's one campus. One reason why I think that's the idea is because you will actually be interacting with RHD, you know, I think the likelihood of you interacting with RHD will be much greater if you actually live in a residential.
The time of discussion on this resolution has actually expired, but there are 3 people on the speaker's list if people wish to continue questioning.
Motion to extend.
All right, sure. Yeah, there's a motion to extend. Second. Great. Representative Dan.
So first, I want to echo Representative Sy's question on why further definition and explanation of the first therefore resolved. You know, why further definitions of those are necessary when we have both an application process as well as an interview process that those clearly express the clearly express themselves in the application. And then just moving beyond that and on to the application itself, is this the actual application that you guys are planning on using? So first I just want to make sure that that bottom line selected candidate students will be emailed the decision within 2 weeks of the application process. Just make sure that people that are judging the application process can abide by that and, you know, possibly look at whether or not that needs to be longer. And then also, I'm not sure, I would like to possibly work on some of the questions, such as number 5, describing the students as an ideal RHD. A lot of students going into this won't really know what their ideal RHD is. What each RHD can bring to the table. And I think boxing them in at this early stage is a problem, as well as it could lead certain members of the committee who are maybe looking at this application. They may say, well, you know, are they going to support my ideal RHD candidate? I think that leads to the danger of the echo chamber.
Absolutely. A lot of good things to look at. You know, this is the purpose of introducing a resolution, you know, at the first meeting to hear your concerns. And I think that over the course of the next week, we're going to work to look at those and change them. And I just want to kind of bring up a more general point about this resolution. Right now, as it stands, students have the most voice students have in this process is that the administration lets RAs from time to time sit in on RA interviews and just submit a paper evaluation form. And as we all know, paper evaluation forms can easily be pushed aside and ignored, whereas 2 flesh and blood students sitting right there cannot be. And this is what this resolution achieves.
Representative Glass.
I don't.
VPN.
Yeah, so my question was, how are you going to solicit applications for this?
Yeah, we're actually talking about this.
Good answer. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this resolution? Oh, Parliamentarian Cook.
I just have one quick question, which is that you noted previously that there's a discrepancy between what you're proposing students have and what the, I guess, opportunities are for RAs in the RHD selection process. So I was wondering if you could speak to the third whereas clause and why you think, because there's a difference between what you're proposing and what they have, why you feel it's necessary.
Okay, anyone else who wishes to be put on the speaker? Okay, thank you for presenting, and we'll vote on it next week. Yeah, so I have one more announcement, and it should have been made previously, but it just slipped my mind.
We want to have a conversation all about, probably not in a good time, but about the penicillin for Alana.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll
saying?
Do that later. Yeah, I
might get better executive session.
Yeah, I wanted to commend VP Basil on managing the marathon of a 3-hour meeting and the Appropriations Committee for a very vibrant and lively discussion on Monday, and just in general having a well-run meeting. And I'd also like to request Assembly members to stay for executive session to discuss two things really quick before we depart for this. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.